Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. We're going to have a lot of fun today. We have Guide Talk, and then we've got the amazing and beautiful Queens of the Roundtable. That is all ahead on this day. So it's going to be probably one of my favorite days of the week. Dr. Peter Kapsner, Dr. Jim Bilby are in studio, and we're going to tackle guy issues. We call it Guide Talk, but we're open to talking about anything, but we prefer to stay on guy issues. And guys can call, and ladies can call as well. So if you've got a question or an issue you'd like us to tackle, feel free to give us a call, 877-933-2484. You can come on the studio line and talk to us live, or you can send us a text. Again, that number is 877-933-2484. And then in hour two, we're going to have the ladies in the studio. So we just want this to be informative, interesting, engaging, good, solid Christian talk about just about anything and everything. So that's where we're headed. We're going to take a little break, and in 60 seconds, we'll be back, and we'll start with Guy Talk segment number four.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way, you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
B-A-B-E-B-B-I-Bicky-Bi-B-O-Bo-Bicky-Bi-Bo-B-U-Boo-Bicky-Bi-Bo-Boo.
C-H-A-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C Yeah, I always look forward to this. This is segment four. Dr. Peter Kapsner, Dr. Jim Bilby in studio. And if you've listened to this segment before, you know kind of anything and everything can happen. So if you have a question or an issue you'd like us to tackle, give us a call or send us a text, 877-933-2484. Gentlemen, nice to have you in studio.
Always great to be here, Bill.
Good to be here, Bill.
We're sort of wildly curious what's going to happen today, aren't we, Jim?
Yes, we are.
Just the anticipation is insane.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me start off with kind of a easy question. What have your children taught you? What has your children? My grammar's terrible.
It's got to be either has or have, though.
We
sorted that out. Yeah. I think the first thing that comes to mind is I didn't realize. I don't know when I lost my sense of wonder, just in sort of the normal daily things in life. But I think watching them look out the window, watching them notice birds in a certain kind of way, mm-hmm. or watching them if we have a deer that happens to walk by or something like that, with just sort of rapt attention in how present they are to that situation and their eyes are wide, I just began to wonder, when did I get dulled to that sense of wonder, mm-hmm. and what creates wonder in my life? And I think there is a possibility, and I've actually begun to experience it again, is some wonder in some really simple things. And I find that is it's really anchoring for the entire day, actually, in some really weird ways. I wouldn't have thought that, but when you can take wonder in a small thing like that, the day just looks different somehow.
Yeah, that's an awesome point.
Yeah, so interestingly, as a theologian, my answer, I'm sort of initially drawn to a theological thing, and it goes all the way back to the birth of my firstborn. My oldest is named Sierra, and I had this very profound experience holding her for the first time. Mm. And the sense of responsibility, mm-hmm. the sense of love that was beyond anything that I kind of thought myself capable of, or at a different level that I thought myself capable of, just wonder, perhaps even at this eternal soul that was sitting in my hands, that to this day is the strongest argument for God's existence I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an experiential moment that I just can't even imagine. So, and there have been various times as a father over the last 21 years that I've had that feeling also in a very strong way kind of recur. And so so that's maybe perhaps more from being a father, I've learned this thing. I think I've learned so much about myself,
mm-hmm.
and so much about what it means to love, and so much about, you know, you see yourself written young in your children, yeah. right?
Like you a young version of yourself?
Yeah. I mean, you go back and you say, wow, I have that exact same thing. And it's just, you know, rewinded back quite mm-hmm. a few years. And so you learn so much about yourself. You learn, I think, about God as creator. When we engage in this little act of creation that we call having children.
Yeah, well, it prompts the next question. How are you like your father?
Yeah, I find myself sitting in certain ways that my dad, if I catch myself in the mirror sometimes with like two fingers on my cheek propped up like this, and I think, oh my gosh, I just saw my dad in that moment. But, you know, it's been interesting to watch my own dad continue on a journey of change and transformation. So I can't categorize him in any one way, but he's become a lot softer over the years. He's become a lot more available, a lot more present, a lot more other-centered. And I think maybe there's sort of this natural career arc that happens where you're busy sort of trying to build your career and you're thinking about how am I going to provide and how am I going to sustain. And I think maybe when a lot of those questions were answered for him, he turned and began to sort of give back in some really interesting ways. And I can't say that I'm like that, but I can hope that I can see the trajectory of that, that mm-hmm. he's for other people in ways that I guess I would aspire to for the rest of however long I have on this journey on earth.
Did you ever say that, you know, I'm never going to embrace this quality, or I'm never going to be like my dad in this area, and all of a sudden one day you wake up and you go, oh, I guess I am like him now?
You know, my dad gave both my brother and I have one older brother, a really profound gift when he said that I'm only going to be able to take life in the kingdom this far, this sort of idea, but I really hope that you exceed, that you recognize my shortcomings and that you also can move past those sorts of things, that you don't get stuck in the same things that I get stuck in. And it was a profound gift that even Hallie and I, my wife and I, we talk about with our kids. We were able to say, I hope whatever you see in us, you recognize the things that are not great and are willing to press into those things and move past all of those things. So certainly I see my dad grew up in a household where his dad was not very available from mm-hmm. just a conversational standpoint. And my dad took that another step. And he was more available to my brother and I from a conversational standpoint. But I recognize that I'm not as available as I would even like to be sometimes in a conversational standpoint with my kids. So I hope they keep that journey moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who knows my dad knows he's like the world's nicest guy.
Yeah.
And
I'd like to meet him.
He is, you know, longtime professor here at Northwestern, now retired. And so everybody just, like, the world's nicest guy. And growing up, I wanted to be athlete, tough. I didn't want to be nice. And so I, you know, kind of a little bit maybe pushed myself away or didn't want to see myself through that lens. But as I've gotten older, I've seen that as I engage my students, that I have been gifted with his nice guy, like just ability to connect with people. And that comes direct. That comes certainly from him. And it's something that, I mean, I don't think that I reach his level of kindness and gentleness, but it's a thing that's there. And I think is, you know, a really powerful thing for a teacher to just be able to be accessible and vulnerable and be able to connect with students.
Mm-hmm. So what do you respect about other men?
Well, I mean, even listening to you talk, Jim, it's part of why I've so appreciated our friendship. Is one thing I respect in you is your authentic vulnerability. It is, I mean, I get it, that's selective. There's only so much that we share over time with one another. But I don't sniff about you that there's an inauthenticity when you're talking about stuff. So it's something I respect is mm-hmm. Vulnerability and a willingness to go to some places with other men. And it doesn't have to be this woe is me kind of thing. It's just like, this is the real deal. This is who I am. Yeah. And I think I respect that more than anything.
Yeah, and with that, just a capacity to have some emotional bandwidth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right? I like the type the tough guy thing as much as anybody else. I like the, you know, when it's time to buckle down and get it done, you know, that you get her done, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's just that sort of tough, conquering sort of mentality, and if there's not some depth and some softness and some ability to, like, engage your heart and to show that and open that up, like when Peter and I can, you know, engage issues and talk about our kids and our marriages and really be authentic and tap the emotional sides of our being. To me, that's so important and so crucial and something I appreciate in other men.
Yeah. What's the first thing you need when you get home from work?
Need to see my kids.
Okay.
Yep. Need to see my kids first thing.
I need to not be around people.
Peter's come over and see your kids too.
Peter's an extrovert. I'm an introvert. I'm with people all day. I need at least a little bit of time where I'm not engaging.
Yeah. So what's your zone time? You need 15, 20? What do you need?
Well, it varies. But I mean, sometimes even just 10 minutes to like lock out the world a little bit,
sure,
and kind of just, you know, successfully live inside my head, you know, be with my thoughts. Sometimes longer, depends on the day, actually. And I've also realized that sometimes in family, the rhythms of life, you don't get that.
Right.
And so you need to toughen up and you need to do what your family needs for you. And then hopefully you get that at some time. But that would be real. That's always really helpful for me.
I just had a listener jump in. My kids taught me fear before becoming a father. I drove too fast. I talk back too quickly to big guys. Just took too many chances. Having kids made me realize how many others depend on me. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
Yeah. We're going to take a little break. If you want to ask a question, question for Guy Talk, give us a call or text us, 877-933-2484. We're going to continue with Peter Kapscher and Jim Bilby and be back in about 90 seconds. To the show. It's 17 minutes after the hour. We are enjoying Guy Talk. If you have an issue you would like us to discuss, please give us a call or send us a text and we'll address it for you. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. When you're talking to your spouse, I'm curious, does your spouse give you more details than you want?
I'm the detail person.
You're the detail person.
So
interesting.
So, well, how about this? When it comes to details of a certain sort, I always want more details. So, we spent that, how much and why? And like, so there's some things I just want all the details.
Okay.
But if it's like the conversation between her and her friend about the other friend who's thinking about,
is that when you glaze over?
Yeah, and then the details get a little much for me. So it depends on what we're talking about. And as soon as I say that, I almost feel a little guilty in that because I'm kind of like, well, that's pretty self-centered of me. but we're being honest here at Guy Talk, so there you go.
Yeah, I like it.
So I understand that there's a statistic out there that says that men on average use about 6,000 words a day and women on average use about 20,000 words a day. So, it is one of those places of tension, Jim, I would say, that in terms of how to navigate that in the relationship, what's the expectation, right? Should the guy move towards more 11, 12, 13,000 words? Should she dial it back a little bit? I mean, how do we, because this can be a place that really leads to misunderstandings about whether you care for somebody just simply because there's a difference in word usage.
Yeah. And so there's that, but also, I mean, every day is a little different, right?
True.
And so I think we probably have to get away from saying, well, this is the way it should look like every single day. What we need to be sensitive to each other's needs to the point where I need to realize when she needs me to engage and listen and talk with her about stuff that otherwise wouldn't be the first thing that I'm engaging when I'm coming home or something like that. And perhaps she needs to, on some days, realize that I've already used up about 18,000 of my 6,000 words at work, and that
you got nothing.
I got nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
There you go.
So if women have more words than men, maybe it prompts this question. What qualities do you think are distinctly female?
Boy, that's a good question, right? In terms of,
I don't know. Well,
yeah,
I mean, like, we could blow up this whole hour now with this question.
I mean, what's conditioned by the environment in which we've grown up, and what is intrinsically male or female? That is a huge question.
Yeah.
You know,
so
in terms
good
of
luck.
Some of
I'm
that.
I'm going to go get some coffee.
Yes,
you guys discuss.
And I'm only just reframing the question.
I know,
so I'm trying to throw it over to Jim.
Yeah,
so this is, I try to sound intelligent for a second, Jim.
Well, because you can get yourself in trouble on this because you do this sort of like, well, women are emotional and nurturing.
But so are men.
But let's be honest, at our best, we absolutely should be. And I know guys that are in some ways far more emotional than women. I'm the most emotional one in my family.
You told me that.
Of my wife and my three daughters and my son. And so are these sorts of generalizations are often not helpful. Even if there's something to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I ultimately do think there's a – having raised three daughters and a son, I kind of think that there's some differences, some deep down hardwired differences. But as soon as we try to come up with the differences are this and we try to name them and get really specific about them, I think we probably do more harm than we do good when we – try to come up with those simplistic categories.
Mm-hmm.
I can certainly say when we talk about it in my sexuality class that as soon as you start categorizing the differences, like you said there, Jim, this is distinctly male and this is distinctly female, there's always a handful of students that say, I don't fit in that category. And then they begin to wonder whether they're actually male or female. I think you can talk about patterns and generalizations. I mean, I know that a lot of the scientific study out there suggests that women are able to multitask simultaneously. They can do multiple things all at the same time. Whereas a guy can multitask, but it's more one thing at a time in very rapid fashion. So they did a study out of Great Britain where they had five guys in an apartment, and they one at a time, they had to do eight different tasks in 5 minutes, and they had a hidden video camera. And none of the five guys could finish the tasks that they had in front of them. It was like make a copy, make some coffee, answer the door. And on the video camera, the guys would like stand there, wait for the coffee to be done. And then they'd go over and make the copy, and then they'd go to the door, and they're doing one thing at a time, whereas the women, they all accomplished the tasks, and they were hitting the copy machine, making coffee, answering the door all at the same time. Now, again, these are trends and ideas, so I think there are differences. We don't want to just collapse the differences, but at the same time, I think we have to be careful to say this is male and this is female.
That's certainly the case in my family.
Yeah, me too.
My oldest daughter, this is about 5 years ago, said one time, she said, Dad, you know, Mom can, you know, multitask, but you, and she wanted to say monotask, but what she said was, you semi-task. So I do half a task at a time.
Yeah.
And there's something to that. So certainly that's a pattern that plays out in my experience that I'm much more do one thing at a time and then move on. And my wife is very much more juggle all the different balls and keep the plate spinning much more so than me.
Mm-hmm. How important is it for men and women to have good same-sex friends?
Absolutely so crucial.
Okay. Agreed.
My wife has some friends, some of her girlfriends that are, you know, they've been friends for literally 25 years,
mm-hmm.
and they're she's able to engage with them and to talk about with them about issues that it's just different than how she, even if she's talking to me about the same stuff, it's at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, some of my guy friends, you know, Peter, my friend Jeff, my friend Josh, these are people I recharge in a really important and real way by engaging with them, whether it be just something silly like, you know, playing cribbage,
mm-hmm.
or playing disc golf, or, you know, just sitting around and talking. That is so powerful and so important. And I think one of the things that in our society, we have this idea that, you know, we get married, that's your soulmate. And now you need to find everything that is important about, you know, you relationally needs to find its source in this other person. I don't know who can possibly live up to that.
Yeah.
And so it is so important, not just for healthy marriages, but I think healthy relationships of any sort, that you have these same-sex friendships.
Yeah, I find myself consistently being a better husband, at least for a few hours after you and I have had some time together, Jim, like that, whether it's going down to a Wolves game or hanging out, like you said, playing cribbage or something like that, I'm recharging a different kind of way. And I think there's just sort of this shared experience of being a guy and being a husband that that is unique, that you need to share with another person in that way. Just as guys, you have a different kind of experience. Again, I don't know what all the differences are for sure between men and women, but they are different. And so the experience itself is different, and it does something really different in our marriage then too. And I guess there's the one caveat that I always have with all of this is that if you and I are out for the night, Jim, or something, would I be willing to share with Hallie the same things that I'm sharing with you? Because what I don't want to do is lean into somebody else in a way that I wouldn't then lean into my wife, even though I'm leaning into you or Bill if we're having a conversation or something is different in its quality than talking with Hallie about it. I don't want to withhold pieces of my life and segment them out, because pretty soon you can kind of split in some really interesting ways.
Yeah, well, because then it becomes you have a portion of your life
right.
You're not sharing with your
right.
wife. And even if it ultimately ends up being different, to kind of lock her out in that way would be really dangerous from a relational point of view.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Because I do hear this often with callers and listeners that they express concern that their significant other doesn't have a lot of good same-sex friendships.
Interesting. So that is a pattern
they don't know,
that people
they,
say,
they don't know what to do about it. I mean, you can't say, go out and make some friends, right?
I see, we were talking about our parents earlier and our fathers, Jim. I don't know what it's like for your father, but my dad has had a good guy friend throughout the course of his life, even now into his 70s. And that is unique for people of his generation in particular. There's a lot of his people that he knows in his sort of circle of maybe church friends that wouldn't have a friend like that, a same-sex friend to hang out with. And so I'm not sure if it's a generational thing or if it's beyond all of that, but certainly I know in the generation in front of us, there's not a lot of guys that have good friends.
Yeah, I concur with that. That's my experience as well. There are a number of people who I'm very good friends with that would say the same about their parents or the people ahead of that. There are that, and whether it's a generational thing, it's just this is, you know, you throw yourself wholly into your family, you know, and who's going to object to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that the idea is so
sounds great.
It sounds
yeah.
great, right? But when you do that, I think there's, even though your goal is a positive thing to like, I'm going to focus on my family, it can kind of backfire and you don't end up with not enough resources to actually be a good parent, of being a good husband. And I think it could be dangerous.
Yeah. So time with your same-sex friends is critical for having a good, healthy marriage, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
again,
yeah.
I have another guy friend. We just went bowling the other day together for an hour and a half, and there's just something about that.
I know.
We're already on that trajectory, Bill. That's as athletic as I can be at this age now. So there you go.
All right. Well, admitting the problem is the first step of solving it, Peter.
You are listening to Guy Talk. I've got Dr. Peter Kaffner and Dr. Jim Bilby in the studio. If you have a question or an issue you would like us to discuss, you know what, just give us a call, 877-933-2484, or you can send us a text, and I'll ask it on your behalf. Any kind of guy issue you want to bring up, of course, it's open to both men and women. Anytime, give us a call, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back. It is 31 minutes after the hour. Guy Talk is underway. Dr. Peter Kaffner and Dr. Jim Bilby in studio. So we're taking all kinds of questions, guy issues, relationship issues, whatever you have, we'll take. Here's one gentleman. The husband apparently goes out and works very hard throughout the day, making a lot of tough decisions, feels a little bit beat up, comes home at night, needs to veg on the couch. And the wife wants to interact, wants to connect, wants to talk. He doesn't want to do much except veg. How do you solve that one?
Boy, that certainly could describe experiences and significant seasons in my own life. I'll say that. I mean, I know for sure when I was going through school, you know, to try to get this job as a professor and all those sorts of things, it was real stressful to try to navigate so much of the day and come home. And I think, Bill, what I unfortunately began to believe was that, well, the relationship can wait until the next day, and then it can wait until the next day, and I just need this time. I just need this time. But I found that those days pretty quickly became months, and then those months pretty quickly could become a year, and if not careful, it would just, you get into that rut and that pattern. And I think you almost teach yourself sort of the rhythm and the routine. In the same way I wake up and want the same bowl of cereal or something, I get home at night, and I've just, I need the couch, and I need ESPN, and it's pretty tough the longer you live in that pattern to get out of that pattern, and that took some doing in our relationship for sure. So it certainly is a significant issue.
Yeah, I think crucial in this respect is to realize the difference between want and need. So there are some times, like again, I really need a little bit of decompressing time when I come home, and you know, sometimes that can be 5 minutes, sometimes that can be 20 minutes. Now, I might want 5 hours of decompressing time, which would involve all manner of, you know, watching the Timberwolves game and then reading about the Timberwolves game and looking at the box score after the Timberwolves game and all of that. But at that point, I need to, if I'm attuned to my wife's desires, I need to realize that my wants need to be subservient to her need to engage. And actually, if when I do that, and I have realized this, when I engage then in that way, that I realize that actually I need that as well. I'm just less aware of it because I'm drowning all of that in all the thoughts that are going through my head and in all my attempts to kind of recharge or just get through the next day or whatever it is. So it's really important that we're aware of, yeah, there are some certain needs or really important things that, but we can't push that too far into just we're doing whatever we want.
Yeah, and I would say that if I was honest with myself, especially during those seasons, and that I would more highly value a successful career than I did highly value a successful marriage. I mean, you can say you want to have a successful marriage and that you should have a successful marriage, but your actions really are so often demonstrated by that which you value. And if I was honest with myself, getting ahead in the career, getting that job, getting that next rung up the ladder was what was driving most of my daily existence, is that next rung. And that was such an illusion in so many ways. But you sacrifice a lot for those rungs on the ladder. And there had to be an authentic reevaluation of that which I valued.
And tied in with that, we need to realize that our relationships don't happen just by accident.
They don't.
They require intentionality. And so we need to work as hard at these relationships as we work as hard to climb whatever ladders, to write whatever books, to, you know, teach whatever classes. So that requires work. And if you're not willing to put in the time, you shouldn't expect it to be that it's going to work out well, that you're going to be it's going to be fulfilling and what you want.
Yeah, and the funny thing about the ladder is that I can spend 3 or 4 years getting to that next rung, and then I'm satisfied for about 16 seconds on that rung in the ladder, and then I got to go to the next one and the next one, and there's never an end to that ladder where you say, gosh, I'm just fully satisfied. You have to sort of actively decide, I can still have a successful career by whatever metrics, but I'm not going to be driven by trying to get up that next phase of the ladder, because you can run roughshod pretty quickly in those relationships that you say that matter.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All right, here's a question, gentlemen. Why do far fewer men go to college these days than women? Are men treated badly at college, being told that their gender is the source of everything wrong in our country? Do we not expect boys to go to college anymore, or is it something else?
Wow.
Wow.
You know, it does seem to be my experience. I think Bethel is around 60-40, males to females, 58-42, somewhere in there. So there does seem to be a difference. I also do tend to see a difference in how engaged male students are with studying compared to female students. You know, I used to, on all my tests, I'd ask two questions. What grade do you expect to get, and how long did you study for this exam? And inevitably, the male studied way less, but expected to get a much higher grade. The women studied more and expected to get a worse grade. There's problems probably on both sides of that. There is perhaps something in our society that tells men that their value is found in areas other than that of academic achievement. So those that go, you know, perhaps internalize a little bit of the message that, yeah, I'm going to work at this, but I'm not going to work too hard, right? And then there are an awful lot of guys that just buy the idea that this isn't what they need. They can be a professional basketball player or whatever else, right? And it's so there probably are some subtle messages that are out there in society that are suppressing that.
Well, and I find it interesting, too, that so many of the new degree tracks that we've seen over the last decade, Jim, have maybe been in fields of, like, what would be considered reconciliation studies. And then the classes that are offered in that kind of study program might be feminist reconciliation studies or ethnic reconciliation studies. But there isn't this sense, and it's interesting, I think, part of where we are as a country. You wouldn't find white male studies as part of that. And I think we're living in a really interesting time in our country where there has been sort of this shift of power balance that there's a lot of energy for, and I think for some understandable reasons. But, boy, there sure is a lot of division in some of these sorts of things. And certainly there has been a movement in academia to lift up those who historically have felt oppressed and to sort of drive down those people who have historically been seen as the oppressors. And these are really important conversations that escape any one camp or any one category. But it is really interesting to see the kinds of classes and the kinds of conversations that are more valued, I think, even not just in sociology, but theology and other places as well.
Yeah, I'm actually all in favor of taking segments of society that have been oppressed or that have been marginalized and lifting them up. That is so important. And actually, I think we need to even do a better job than we're currently doing. The unfortunate thing is the mindset that to lift up one segment requires smashing down another.
Yeah, it's a zero-sum game, and it doesn't have to be that.
That sort of zero-sum game is unhelpful for everybody involved. And perhaps there is a little bit of truth to this idea that since, you know, males, and particularly white males, have been giving a place of prominence in society, that they need to be tamped down a little bit. And that might be part of this. And if so, that's tragic, and we need to do better.
Yeah. All right. What about when a couple wants to equip the husband to lead and understand the financial area of the family when the wife does the budgeting and financial side of things? I mean, even if the leading doesn't mean taking over any of that, but just being confident and involved. So women must want men to be confident and involved at all times.
Well, I think being confident and involved is a really good thing for both members of the relationship. That should be something we're striving in every aspect, whatever we're talking about. And let's be honest, that can include men cleaning the house and taking a full share of raising children and all of that. So the idea of being confident and involved for both is I love that. That's a great idea. I guess I would probably ask why in any given instance. Is there hesitation on the guy's part to be confident involved, or why is that not already happening?
Mm-hmm.
My own take on these things is these things are often gift-based.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things that I am just wired more naturally for than my wife, and there are things that she's more naturally wired for than me, and we do a little bit of division of labor.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that case, it shouldn't be the sort of thing where I'm just over in the corner doing my own thing. It has to be I'm trying to pull her in on this and make sure that she's aware of what's happening or what financial decisions are making, and same thing on her part. So it's sensible to have a little bit of division of labor thing. And I think it's also every marriage is so different that individual circumstances can be very unique.
Do you do the books at your house?
I do.
You do? Peter, you?
Yeah, I do. But I live in an interesting dichotomy in that in my business that I own, that I co-own with my sister-in-law, she does all the books there. So I don't have really much to say about the finances there. So I live on that side of it. But I do the books in our house. And I think one of the things that Hallie and I run into, because it started as sort of a division of labor, just a practical, hey, deal with the bills sort of each month and those sorts of things. But for both of us with five kids to have the kind of time we want to have to decide how do we want to allocate our money, where do we want to spend, that's one of the things I know for her, for very understandable reasons, she would like to be more involved with, to move beyond just the practical division of labor to let's really talk about how we're spending our money.
Mm-hmm. You know, on Guy Talk, we talk about guy issues, and I got an interesting question from a listener, and this is total guy stuff right now. And he said, what are your thoughts on testosterone hormone replacement therapy for depression, low energy, and lack of motivation? Now, he says, I'm just tired. I want to finish the race well. He goes, I'm not about sex. I just want energy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that our hormones are very subject to environmental influences. You know, we don't just have natural or unnatural amounts. They're very subject to the things that we eat, to our environment around us. And so I think in the same way, with some care and some discernment, but in the same way we might, you know, have a Tylenol for a headache or something along those lines, just recognize that the environment wreaks havoc on our hormones these days. I mean, our inability to sleep these days is specifically related to melatonin levels because we're on our screens all day long.
Yeah.
And so in the same way, testosterone, as you're saying, not in a way because they want to be sexually recharged or something like that,
right,
but just to have energy and some passion again, I don't see any issue with
yeah.
that.
And of course, yeah, I agree.
Let me just jump in midstream here, Jim, if you don't mind. Of course, I would always say, see a doctor and ask him.
Yeah, that's
don't
probably
don't take
good
advice from us clowns.
Yeah. Oh. And don't just order it off the internet.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
No, oh, that's crucial, right?
You yes,
have,
exactly.
We have to be wise.
Yeah, that's a disclaimer there.
Yeah. No, I think really, as Peter said, there's so many things just in the environment that can skew that. So for some people, they might be more just by their nature, more low in terms of testosterone levels than others. And I think something like that's appropriate. I always get a little worried, though, when you're talking about something that should be there naturally
mm-hmm.
and you're finding ways to put that in artificially.
Right.
So, for instance, use the example of sleep. My daughter, who was having a little bit of hard time sleeping, you know, first year of college kind of craziness, she started because her roommate was taking melatonin.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
She started taking melatonin to help go to sleep. The problem is that research shows that when you start artificially taking melatonin, your body goes, oh, good, I don't have to produce that
right.
anymore.
Right.
And you, over the long term, harm your body by shutting down the natural production of that.
Right.
So I would be far more in favor of something that would be a natural supplement that would increase the body's tendency to produce testosterone
right.
or melatonin rather than just dumping it in apart from that.
Yeah.
So, but again, we should all always ask a doctor about all this stuff.
Right. Even though you guys are doctors, I'm not asking you guys.
Not that kind of doctor. Yeah.
Not that kind.
Not a useful one.
Yeah. Let me take a break. If you have a question you'd like us to address on Guy Talk, give us a call or send us a text, 877-933-2484. Dr. Peter Kapsner, Dr. Jim Bilby in studio. We'll be right back. It is 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Guy Talk is underway, segment 4. And I'm joined in studio by Dr. Peter Kapsner and Dr. Jim Bilby. All kinds of questions are coming in, so let's get to a couple of them. Here's a question about the emasculation of men. How to approach husband who says he feels emasculated? What does that mean? How to navigate that when wife earns double the salary?
Wow, tough one, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think that this idea of emasculation is a real thing, that it's an important thing. There are men that feel either disrespected or not empowered or not freed up to kind of be who they are. So there's a real issue here. I do want to take a little bit of time to point out how American and kind of American culture that particular problem is. So you know, the fact that your wife is making more money than you, where in scripture do we get the idea that men have to be earning more money than our wives, right? I'm not convinced that that's something that is, you know, a true man does that, right? I get it given our cultural context, but that might be a thing that in terms of as we, you know, look at scripture for how are we going to live and we seek to shape our mindset from scripture rather than culture, maybe we just say, well, no, maybe for me to be truly a man is not about how much money I make. My value as a man is not defined by the size of my salary, by how much money I bring home from my job, but by virtues that I have in my relationship, in my family, how I treat my wife, how I treat my kids, how I treat the people that I bump into. Those would be things that I think would be far more important than salary sorts of mm-hmm. issues.
Yeah, I think super understandable situation. I think a lot of guys struggle with exactly what this caller had in terms of struggles. But I think, Jim, you point out such an important reality in this is what is the target of masculinity? I mean, what is it that would make us feel emasculized when we're trying to hit a masculine target? And I think some of this is just a function of we've lived in a couple of generations where fathers have tended to be more absent than not in the household, whether it's because of a divorce situation or somebody who was still part of the family, but was not really emotionally or spiritually present in the family. My young men in my classes, Jim, I don't know what you see, but they have a lot of questions about what it means to actually be male. But we're one of the first societies that I know of in world history where there's more of a tendency for men to be gone from the household than actually present in helping shape their boys in ways of masculinity. So there is some recapturing of what would constitute masculinity, because I think a lot of guys struggle with this very same issue.
Mm-hmm. What are some ways, there's another question, what are some ways to deal with issues that arise with a selfish spouse to the point where the other spouse wants absolutely nothing to do with any kind of planning because everything always ends up being the way the other spouse wants?
So they're a bit of a diva?
Maybe that could be it.
Yeah, boy, that's... I don't know of any other... you have to get some outside voices into that deal because you just can't... And this is one of those examples of having trusted friends, not just individual same-gender friends, but you've got to have trusted friends around you that can have voices into your life. And that is a tricky conversation to have, that one.
That one's... It's really important because it can be the case that you, a person, just assumes that, well, they're going to get their way anyway, but they think that because they feel like they're not getting their way. I mean, so it's just, so there might be selfishness on both sides and one person has a stronger personality. The problem is not just, well, you're selfish. The problem is we're selfish and we're not talking about this well. So there's so much difficulty there, but I do resonate. I do think there's a real problem when there's some people in a relationship that's like, they're just so rigid about it has to be exactly this way. And unless it goes exactly this way, it's not okay. And the only thing I can say as advice is that marriage counseling should be something that is a part of daily or not daily, but a part of the rhythm of relationship. Mm-hmm. We sometimes think of marriage counseling as being, you know, like use an automotive metaphor. You know, you only do that when the, you know, engine breaks down and you need to replace the engine. It should be thought of more as an oil change.
Scheduled maintenance.
Like scheduled maintenance. You just do this in a more regular way to have some better patterns of talking about these things, some more effective ways of engaging these questions.
Yeah. Now, you guys have young daughters. Your daughter's 20, 19, Jim?
I have 21, 19, and 14.
Okay, so yeah. And Peter,
I got 17 and 11.
Yeah. Yep. So here's a question. I've been on a few dates with this Christian guy. He's offered to pay for things, and I really appreciate that. With all you being men and I being a young woman, how should paying for things look in Christian dating? I don't want him to think that I'm a burden, yet I also want to make sure that he's taking his Christian role as a young man seriously and is willing to invest in me.
Yeah, I pointed me on that one, Jim. I mean, I guess it's one of those things where I think we have to be careful once again to say that to be a man means that you pay for everything. That's part of a scriptural mandate to be a man. And yet I think I would be hesitant to lose some of that sort of historic chivalry that men treat women in ways along these lines where there's a care and there's a protection of. I know Hallie and I have had these conversations about what it means to be male and female in our own relationship. And when we used to live overseas, there was a sense in which when I left for a couple of days to travel or something, she would articulate that the household felt different when I was gone. And if she did the same thing, I would say the household felt different. But the way that she would describe it is there is not a protective covering over her and over the household in the way that there was when I was there. And it's not like I'm big and strong and tough and can fight somebody off or anything, but there is this sense of a care and a protective reality that I think can get manifested in some of these dating ways and ways to pay. Does it mean the guy should pay every time? Of course not. But it does mean that there can be some just noticing of some interesting roles in that place.
Yeah. Well, you could start by stop wearing tank tops all winter long.
That would be helpful.
Yeah, it would be.
I think it's important. I think this idea of dating, to the degree dating in America is at all, I mean, it can be really problematic, just the very concept of dating. But to the degree there's something, you know, that's okay about this, I think it's appropriate that men see this as a role as they're getting to know this young woman, that this is something they do. This is, they pay for the date.
What are some good characteristics for her to be looking for in this young Christian man, things that should be consistent as we start dating? Deal breakers or deal makers? Anything about what she should be looking for?
I think you just described a situation a second ago in terms of, is it all about them when it comes to me, or, you know, all about the guy when it comes to making plans or something. There certainly are a lot of self-centered young men that I know that are huge red flags that the dating relationship is all about them. And so, and I have seen that in some of my own kids in terms of maybe who they've chosen and who they've dated. And it's revealed pretty quickly when it's all about them, because when it's all about the guy, it's going to manifest itself in some pretty ugly ways, including some things with sexual boundaries and all of those that I think is just not a good situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crucial. So the person has to be interested in the young woman herself,
yep.
Not as a means to an end,
yep.
Not as you're good looking, so I look impressive because you're with me, but so genuine interest in the young woman herself, in what she is interested in, what she likes, and then just the desire to be a good friend. So we kind of want to, you know, think, oh, dating, it's a farm, we're not just friends. But you can't possibly engage in a positive dating relationship if you're not willing to think about what is it like to be a good friend in this particular circumstance. So I also would ask, like, how does this guy spend his time? If this guy spends all his time playing Fortnite and doesn't have much goals other than that, to me, that would be a red flag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying you can't play video games. Young men play video games. I play video games. This is fun. But how much time is being spent, and is it being spent fruitfully or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Another caller, Tom from Fargo, he jumped in with a comment that I think that a lot of guys feel that when their wives make more than they – as the husband, they feel inferior, but remember that your wife is for you, not against you, fighting together, not separately.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, you made the comment off the air, Jim. You'd be thrilled if Michelle made twice as what you did.
I'd love it. Mm-hmm. Actually, absolutely. Three times. Four.
Let's just go to 10.
Let's say 10 times.
10 is fine.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I had a caller, a listener that said, where is a good place to get a degree to become a chaplain? He really is interested in becoming, that's a dream of his, to become a Christian chaplain. Is there a chaplain school? What is there?
Yeah, I mean, there's different ones. And I think the best counseling I got when it came to that kind of degree path, when it came to ministry, was to certainly get an anchoring in some more sort of conservatively oriented historic truths of the faith when it comes to the scriptures and theology, but also go to an institution that is maybe a bit more secularized and a bit liberal so that you can understand the ways in which so many people in the world are thinking. And if you're going to be a chaplain, you're going to get exposed to every form of faith, every form of religious persuasion and tradition and all of that. And I think to be empowered through different kinds of universities would, I think, be really helpful in that process.
Mm-hmm. We just have a couple minutes left. What kind of gifts do you enjoy giving?
Wow. So, you know, there's various love languages.
Yeah.
Gifts isn't at the highest for me, okay. Either in giving or receiving. But I like... just as a default, I like things that can be used,
okay.
Right? So maybe that's why I'm terrible at gift giving, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, so a new golf club for my brother,
sure.
Or something that has sort of daily use and benefit rather than something that has just purely sentimental value but has no sort of daily use.
And is the card that you give to your wife every bit as important as the present?
Yeah, I think what you write in that card is absolutely critical. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really what it's about.
Yeah, and if you're just making up a bunch of stuff in there, you know, that sounds good as opposed to coming. It can get sniffed out pretty quickly.
Yeah. Guys, thanks for coming into the studio. I love this segment. This is a blast. I know our listeners like it too. Guide Talk segment 4 is just coming to a close. If you want to ask a question, we'll be back together next Thursday in the afternoon. Thanks to Dr. Peter Kapschner and Dr. Jim Bilby for coming in the studio for Guy Talk. That wraps it up. You know, we've got coming up next Girl Talk, but we don't call it Girl Talk. We call it the amazing and beautiful Queens of the Roundtable. That's all up next. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.